Hi, I'm Shantae, and in today's Purposeful Conversation, we are speaking with Sherry Dodditor. She is the author of Handwriting Brain-Body Disconnect, Adaptive Teaching Techniques to Unlock a Child's Dysgraphia for the Classroom and Home. Oh, Sherry, I'm very excited to have you. Welcome.
Hi, it's great to be here.
What we're going to be talking about today is dysgraphia, obviously, what it is and what parents need to know. Well, tell us a little bit more about yourself so we don't know you.
All right. So I've been an occupational therapist for 25 years. The last 10 of them have been school-based occupational therapy. And around 2013, I felt like I wasn't getting what I needed from the OT literature. So I went to become an educational advocate. And during that training, I realized, oh man, I don't know anything about what I'm doing. So it almost felt like I was going back to square one, back into the world of education from like being a really new grad. And I kept getting a question, how can my child read but not be able to write? That one blew my mind. I had no idea. Now, the children that were having struggle in reading, having struggle in writing, that all came together. It was that one that, how can my child read and not be able to write? That really threw me for a loop. So I kept investigating. And lo and behold, I had enough material to write a book. So I had to do it. And I can tell you this, I can count on my fingers and toes people that have come in since I published back in March, how much it has changed kids' lives. I had one kid that was eloping from school who now can't wait to get on the bus just because they changed his SDI, specially designed instruction, to accommodate for the dysgraphia. Before that, they had no idea. So it was amazing, the stories that I keep getting told.
Okay, so we might have to back up a little bit. So for listeners, explain, what is dysgraphia?
Okay. So dysgraphia, it's very vague. I must admit, the definitions that you can find anywhere on the internet are vague. The most clear definition that I found was in the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Health Disorders. Okay, let's shorten that up because everybody has heard of the DSM-5. That's the one I'm talking about. So what they say, and I'm going to read their definition to you. Dysgraphia is difficulty with spelling and written expression. Now, they define problems with spelling as adding letters, omitting letters, substituting vowels or consonants where they don't belong. And written expression is making grammatical or punctuation errors, employing poor paragraph organization, and having very lack of clarity within the paragraph itself. It doesn't give us a whole lot of information, does it?
No, I'm like, okay, what does that mean?
So Exactly. So I went by, what is it when it breaks it up? So dys means that you can't do something. Graph means to write. So dysgraph is the inability to write. And did you know that 33% of elementary students have difficulty with handwriting today? That's 1 in 3 students have difficulty with handwriting. So dysgraphia is difficulty with writing from everywhere, from being able to put a letter on a piece of paper all the way up through being able to have a conversational speech on paper.
All right, you kind of lost me a little bit on that. Say that last part again.
So it's everywhere from going from actually forming a letter on a piece of paper all the way up through to having some kind of conversation on paper. So paragraphs, letter writing.
So what are the symptoms or signs of dysgraphia? And how, and then I also want, once you tell us that, I also want you to include, like, how would a parent confirm that that happens? So can you share that with us?
Sure. So this list that I'm going to share with you is a synchronized, merged, purged list from several different authors. So I'm just going to read through the list for you, and then you can see if any of these trigger in your mind that your student might be having those kind of troubles. Avoiding writing tasks. How many of them are doing that? All of them, right? Letters and numbers are reversed. Writing slower than typical students of the same age. So their speed of their writing is much slower. They might have odd positions of their wrist or the paper. They have cramping of fingers and hands. They have inefficient pencil pressure. So we have these kids that want to write on the page and it's so light you can't even see it. And then we have other kids that are breaking pencils. They just don't have the right amount of pressure on the page. They might also have an awkward pencil grasp, poor fine motor skills. They may need extra time to complete tasks. The thoughts to get a paragraph on paper are just totally unorganized. They might have difficulty with written expression. And if remember earlier, I said written expression is grammar. It is the punctuation, the capitalization, it's the syntax, and all those pieces that put a sentence together in the right structure. They might mix the B, the D, the P, the Q, and the letter forms. Those are the main ones. Does the stick go first? Does the ball go first? Which one is it? So they get a lot of them that don't remember that, so they resort to the capital instead, which means that they're going to mix their upper and lower case. They might have very irregular looking forms of letters, or the sizes might not be right. They may sequence them in a really odd way. And then the line placement, whether you have a three line, a two line, or a single line, they may not know where to put it on the piece of paper.
Right.
They might have difficulty with margins. You ever have those kids that are writing across the page and then they go right down the side and then it looks like a rainbow when they're done with their paper and everything looks cramped together on the right?
Yeah, that's my daughter.
And then poor spelling. And that's one of the biggest key indicators, I believe, that parents will see and teachers will see, is that the spelling is poor. Now, all that being said, you asked, what are some key indicators? So my understanding from all the literature that I've read is the main goal of handwriting is legibility and speed. So they want the legibility of what is put in front of them and written so that they hand it in to the teacher is legible. But the other piece of it is that the speed of that information that they put down on paper is very similar to what their peers are handing in. So you don't want a kiddo that's taking three times as long to get everything done and handed in. So one of the things that happens with parents is they are trying to get worksheets done and they're looking at their watch, 1 hour. Kid, would you please get that done? And it's only like five questions, 2 hours. Can you please get that done? 3 hours. Oh. And that's very frustrating for a parent. It's frustrating for the student. They feel like they're missing out. And one of the things that just drives me absolutely insane is when the teachers hold them in from recess to get work done. The thing that their body needs, the thing that their brain needs to run so it can reset and be able to focus on the next 20 minutes of instruction. If you don't give it that time, they're not going to be able to engage and overcome any of those symptoms. Wow. That particular day. So a lot of our kids have trouble with sleep and different aspects of all the things that go along with the symptoms. They all kind of intermingle and clash. And handwriting seems to be the actual task that gets the hardest hit, because 60% of a kid's day in elementary school is putting stuff on paper.
Right. Wow. Yeah.
So when all of the extra things that are going on with a child happen and they're not getting their brain ready for work, the writing is going to suffer the most.
When you talk about the fact that they capitals and the B's and the D's, what's the difference between that and dyslexia?
Okay. So dyslexia is reading. So anything that you're taking into your body through your eyes, you're reading text, it's reading. So I separate the two out using the sensory model So anything that's going in is sensory. It's the dyslexia. So lexia, the root word lex means read. So it's not reading. So you've heard of lexicon,
right?
Lexicon scales. That's where that comes from. It's that Latin root word to mean read. So anything that you're bringing in, you're reading. Your brain manipulates it, interprets it, and then somehow or another, you got to get the information back out. So fluency in reading is actually oral expression. When you have fluency in anything that you write on paper, that's the written expression piece. So the difficulty with oral expression would be like an apraxia or a dyspraxia of oral speech. And the writing is where the dysgraphia comes in. So they're really technically, because it's neurological, they're different processes. What happens with a lot of kids is they'll have difficulty in one area, so they're going to have difficulty in both areas. Because if they don't know what the letters are to even look at them, how are they going to write them? They need to know them first. So another thing that happens with a lot of the kids is their memory, visual memory, is lacking, which is why a lot of times they're mixing the letters, because they're going, which one is it? I can't remember. And then they need a visual cue to help them out.
So just so I'm clear, so dyslexia, they're internalizing, so that is more sensory?
That is sensory.
And dysgraphia?
Is motor.
Is motor. Okay, got it. Because they have to have the brain connect to the hand and write.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So oral motor, which will be in like an oral expression, oral speech. So if you want to help delineate it that way, that might help you out. What the research is saying is 1 in 5 kids have dyslexia. 1 in 3 kids have dysgraphia. Wow. And do we hear a national campaign for dysgraphia? No, we need one. We need one.
People don't even know what it is half the time. I mean, well, okay, that brings me to the question too of how does a child get diagnosed? Because, all right, my daughter is older. We've gone through school. Some of the things that you're talking about, she definitely has done, does, but no one has ever told me your daughter, you know, has dysgraphia. So where does that diagnosis come in, or that labeling? And maybe labeling's not the right word, but.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back to the resources that parents have. One of the first things that they are going to do when they're finding that their kid has a problem is they're going to write a letter to the school. The school is going to have the school psychologist do an evaluation. My recommendation on that first initial evaluation is that the parents are asking for a speech and an occupational therapy evaluation alongside the school psychologist.
Oh, that's a great tip.
So one of the things that they're looking at then is a complete speech. They're looking at, can they bring the information in? Are they having trouble pulling it back out? They're looking at the fluency. They're getting an IQ for the child. The problem is that sometimes they don't go deep enough into the testing. Just doing an IQ test is giving you an overall picture. It's not delving into the different pieces of reading and writing to figure out where the gap is. If it gets to that point where you're just not getting answers, you're going to need a neuropsychology evaluation as well. So I start with the school, and if we are still struggling, we move on and we get somebody who's a little bit more invested and trained into the dyslexia and the dysgraphia. I do caution you, not all neuropsychologists are specializing in the dysgraphia and the dyslexia and the dyscalculia, which is the other piece that we haven't talked about yet. They're not all trained the same way. So you really have to make sure that even when you're going that route, that you're finding one that's going to specialize in the school area, because some of them are really specialized in a much more refined piece of neuropsychology.
So I want to really clarify that, because I think that was really huge what you just shared. So if I'm a parent, when it's recommended that my child gets an evaluation from a psychologist at the school, a psychoeducational evaluation, also ask for an occupational and a language evaluation at the same
time. Correct. Yeah, I would get them all done the first round.
The first round, so you have that information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many of them aren't even going to, like, if I'm brand new, I'm not even going to know about dysgraphia to even understand that. So what would... Right.
So then when they are going through and you're trying to read that evaluation report, highlight things that don't make any sense, and make sure that when you're in the meeting that you get your questions answered.
Okay.
Now, that whole problem stems from that definition I gave you at the very beginning, where the definition of anything written down is very vague. And they have intentionally omitted those words from any of the documentation. And the main reason is because we need to address the areas of need. So I am not necessarily an advocate for writing dyslexia, dysgraphia, and dyscalculia in an IEP. I am an advocate for, my child is having trouble mixing their letters. They need help. And really targeting the symptoms of the dysgraphia as the pieces that are put into the IEP, because the IEP is an educational care plan. It is not a medical diagnosis. They can't diagnose in the school. So work on the symptoms, address the symptoms. Don't address and focusing in getting those words put in. You're going to lose the battle.
So that's a huge point too. Look at the symptoms. I think that's a great way to think of it. So it's not so much that we care about the label. We want to look at if our child is struggling with some of the 18 symptoms that you recommended, that you mentioned, we want to address those.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Is there a way to, I mean, are there different types of dysgraphia?
When I went looking for information about types of dysgraphia, I found some very vague information. And what I tried to do for myself was pull together the information into a logical form that I understood, and then I was able to disseminate to other people. So I have come up with 6 categories. It's visual, spatial, motor, memory, word formation, sentence formation, and paragraph formation. So students with visual, spatial, they're the ones that are really having trouble knowing where to put the letter on the page. If we go as far as those basic first initial writing skills, they just can't figure out that the top line is where you start the capital letter and the bottom line is where you stop the capital letter. They get totally confused with the capital P and the lowercase p, because they're top line to bottom line and then middle line to below the line. They get so confused. They don't know where to place it. So they give up. They will also have characteristics where they have difficulty with puzzles and mazes, and those finding Where's Waldo, I Spy books, they'll have trouble with those as well. With motor dysgraphia, these are the ones that OTs get referrals on all the time, because they're going to be the clumsy kids, and they're coming with a lot more issues neurologically than just a dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and a dyslexia. They are coming with a multitude of sensory motor issues. So they're the ones that get referred to OT all the time, and they're the ones with the most complex problems. Visual memory is the area that I like to talk about next, but visual memory isn't the only part of memory that they have trouble with. They may have auditory memory issues as well. So overall, memory dysgraphia is really just having trouble remembering in their mind's eye what they're supposed to be writing, what they're supposed to be saying, how a sentence structure works, how does a paragraph work, the main idea and 3 points below that, and then a closing sentence. They just can't remember it. So memory is that area in the middle there. With that one, I use visual cues. So my big thing with all of these areas is visual cues and then wean them off until they don't need them. So the next area I talked about was word formation. How many of these kids are trying to have that auditory and the visual go together and they just can't do it? So they have a lot of trouble potentially with putting C, A, and T together to make cat, because they're not making that association with the phonics. So they can't put the words together. And they might get those, but then try to get them to do something like please, enough, where they might write please, PLZ, which is a phonetic spelling of please. Right. They might write ENUF. So really working on strategies to help these kids get through, especially those words that don't look like they sound.
Right.
So I've created a tool called the Body Sentence Alphabet, which takes motions with every single letter so that you can work on the word and create this body sentence out of it. So when I'm using the word enough in my demonstrations, I point to my eye, then my nose, then I open my mouth and stick my finger like in my open mouth. Under the chin, I kind of make a U under my chin. Give me a hand. So I can put my hand out like we're going to have a handshake, and then high five. So we do that movement really big and obnoxious on day one, like Monday. And then by Friday, the idea is, can you do it in your mind so that when you go to write the word enough, you are feeling the motions in your mind, and then you can kind of feel them, but you're not actually moving. Does that make sense?
I'm struggling a little bit.
Okay.
Because so, I'm trying to think like sign language, like ASL, but that's, it's not.
It's not ASL because that's a visual and that's right. Words that you're trying to communicate. No, I'm trying to slow it down and I'm actually trying to create a motor of movement that okay. goes along with it. So making that big arch with your arm and touching your the side of your eye, making a big arch with your arm and a movement that's going to touch your nose, making a big movement and kind of putting your finger at your mouth, making a big movement, making the U. So the idea is huge movements. The movement connected with the letter
okay.
helps solidify the memory. So when you go to actually get it to the point where you're thinking through the movements, that you might be able to get it down on paper. Because one of the things that happens with memory is every movement, every moment of your day gets put in a little category in your brain. And while you're sleeping, those categories go into your long-term memory.
Wow.
If you have had a negative experience that goes along with that instant that that happened, when it comes back out of the long-term memory, that negative emotion is going to come with it. So what happens with a lot of our kids is they get this negative emotional memory associated with writing and they block. So if we can get through that and get to a more positive reinforcement, they do better.
I see.
Okay.
Wow. There's a lot to it, huh?
There is a lot more to it than we thought. So we have two more categories before we move on to another question. The sentence formation, one of the things I have found out is kids have no idea what parts of speech are. Even though we've trained them, we've taught them, when you put a word in front of them, these kids that are struggling with their spelling, their vocabulary, and everything else, they do not understand verbs, nouns, adverbs, adjectives. So I try to help them, but not by teaching, because that's really where speech therapy comes in. I try to do some visual adaptations to help them do that. So every time, we use highlighters a lot. We highlight all verbs one color, all nouns one color, all adjectives one color, all pronouns one color. And we just go through. And I'll tell you, with me having a dysgraphia mild piece and working through it myself, I struggle sometimes with the kids and it's a simple sentence and I'm going, what was that part of speech? So I do struggle with it myself. So I understand where the kids are struggling. And then when we get to paragraph formation, I just try to put all those pieces together, all the visual cues. And one other thing I do with the kids is I create a writing binder for them. So they have samples of what a paragraph should look like. They have samples of verbs. They have samples of adjectives, samples of adverbs, all in this binder that they can have at any time that they need it. And it helps, but unfortunately, they still can do it orally. But when they go to put it on paper, you think that you just saw a deer with headlights and their eyes are all big and you're kind of like, they're staring at you with this blank stare. And you're going, but you just said it. So having a scribe writing out or recording what they say and then writing it out maybe for them so that they can actually see it. You have to take it in steps. Even if you're going to record it, you almost have to write it first and then have them copy. Copying is much easier because it has the visual cue. So be patient with the kids. There is one more thing that I want to mention before you move on to your next question now, is did you know that many, many, many gifted students have handwriting problems?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So a lot of the kids with really high IQs, for whatever reason, they have a learning disability. And most times that learning disability is a dysgraphia of some level. And I think it's just because their brains are so wired for that giftedness, that other wire didn't get finished. Because all this is a wiring of the brain, and it's wiring a lot slower than it should be.
I have a question that wasn't going to be in that we didn't discuss, but okay. So back to like when you were discussing the rewiring of the brain, I have two questions. Can they kind of retrain the brain or rewire the brain through practice?
Yeah, and that's what everybody is doing with the Orton-Gillingham based programs. They're retraining the brain to go slower and try to get those neural connections to work much better. So practice, practice, practice. And people are going to hate me for saying it because they want to resort to keyboarding right away. But having kids practice is the only way the neurological process is going to get implemented in their brain so they can remember how to write it.
Okay. And so, because I'm glad you mentioned that, because like when my daughter struggled, I mean, obviously I didn't have this information. I didn't know it was dysgraphia. No one ever told me. No. At any rate. So I just opted for keyboarding, although that didn't necessarily, you know, work either, because she still has to like spell key, you know, and the words are not coming out, or she does it similar to like what you're saying, like, you know, E-N-U-F, you know, would be enough.
Yeah. We have to take the strength and use that particular strength of the child to be able to help the weakness. So if they have a really good oral expression, record it. If they have good motor planning, then keyboarding may work. Kids that really don't have good motor planning, those clumsy kids, are going to struggle with keyboarding as well. They're not going to be able to get the information out of their brain fast enough to make it work for them. And they don't know where to put their keys. So they have also had that visual memory piece to them. So they can't even remember where the keys are because they're not in alphabetical order on the keyboard.
Wow.
So did that answer that question?
Yes. So then what would you recommend? I mean, I know practice. So is it just practice writing? Like I know I had talked to you earlier when we were scheduling this interview and you had mentioned like, sometimes cursive is easier for them because they don't have to pick up their, so would I be, now my daughter's out of school now, but she still struggles with this. We haven't resolved this. So would I be better to have her practice cursive?
Some of the research is showing that children that have trouble with reading do better with cursive. And that's partially because they start the word, it flows through. When they get to the end of the word, it stops. And they lift their pencil. That's why they are being taught cursive earlier if they have a dyslexia. Because when you're writing the word enough, you don't have to stop. Like if you're printing it, you write the E, you kind of stop. You write the N, you stop. Where if you're writing it in cursive, you write all the letters together and they flow. Now, kids that have motor planning problems sometimes have a little trouble with those four letters that end at the top, the O, the W, the V, and the B, when you're writing in cursive. So really understanding the differences in those connections, and they have to have a really good visual spatial to understand cursive. So if they don't have the visual spatial, a lot of it's got to go back to printing because they don't get the visual spatial piece. So it's not really a straightforward answer.
Gotcha.
But work with the kids' strengths, figure out what part is, and use accommodations that are going to build on the strength and support the weakness.
Okay, thank you. So explain your handwriting. You say this on your site, handwriting is the key to unlocking complete literacy. So Explain that. Tell me what you mean by that.
Literacy is a combination of reading, writing, and keyboarding. If you're missing one piece of the puzzle, you're not going to be fully literate. So you need to have all of the pieces working together to make communication work. You need to be able to just pull it all together and work for it. So as we're moving to a high-tech society, how many of us still use our hands and piece of paper to write out a grocery list? Have your child write out your grocery list for you while you're trying to put the list together. Have them sit there and you have to carrots, bananas. If they don't know how to spell it with them. And try to help them utilize different natural environments to create literacy. So literacy isn't just copying off a piece of paper. It's having fluent communication across all platforms. And because I feel that dysgraphia has been the missing link and the missing problem and the one that has been getting the least research, that's why that sentence really resonates with me, is handwriting is the key to unlocking complete literacy. It's the piece that's pulling it all back together.
Yeah, I love that. And it's been fascinating talking with you. I've learned a lot. I hope, you know,
Thank you.
Excited to be able to share this. It's like we need to have more conversations because...
Wonderful. I'll come back anytime you need me to.
Okay, well, we may. So what would you suggest for parents that have just now listened to our podcast, listened to you and I talking, kind of have some ideas that their child is struggling this? Is there something, you know, they should do at home?
Let them play. Let them pull. Let them go outside and play in the dirt. Let them dig with that resistance. So what is happening is electronics are allowing us to push and touch things. We are not bending our fingers. Mm. So we are getting a strong finger, but we're not getting fingers that can bend strong. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
So letting the kids have any kind of resistance, toys that are going to have to pull apart. That's why kids get so involved with Legos, because they get so into the pulling them apart and putting them back together again. Do you remember the days of the manual typewriter?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got an F, my only F in school. I wasn't good at that.
Now I want you to think it through here and use your imagination. When you were pushing one letter on that typewriter, your finger had to move like a good inch, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. How far does it move on today's
laptop? Not that far.
Not near as far. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that was happening years ago is we were pushing and we were making our fingers move that depth. Today, it's not happening. And phones are even worse because it's just touching.
It's just sliding and stuff. Yeah.
So encouraging the parents to bend their fingers. And one of the things I want to send you is a link to my jellyfish exercise. And that is an exercise that teaches kids how to bend their fingers. So I'm going to share that link with you that you can share it in the notes to the podcast.
Okay.
But the jellyfish is really something that the kids get into. They look like the animal under the water. So, yeah. The other thing I wanted to share was there's an article that came out about kids and handwriting with autism back in 2015. And I'm going to share that research link with you. You may need an occupational therapist that is a member of American Occupational Therapy Association to access it. But basically what that article is saying is whole hand strength is getting better results quickly with legibility of hands, not just fingertips. So making sure that your whole hand is doing the job is going to make it easier than if you are just concentrating on strengthening the fingers themselves.
Wow. So having them exercise. So is that like playing in the dirt or that new clay that's out, like the sand clay? Would that be helpful?
Yeah. Just having that whole hand strength. And the more you can do the resistance, the better off it's going to be.
And that doesn't really matter. I mean, I'm thinking my daughter's older, but that would still be beneficial, right? It doesn't she could
It doesn't go away. It's still, even us as adults, as soon as we get some kind of arthritis in our fingers, that is one of the recommendations, is move your whole hand. Mm-hmm. So it's a lifelong piece that you have to move your hands to keep your hands strong enough so that you can write.
No, I think that's great. Okay, so do you have one tip you want to share, or your number one strategy for children with dysgraphia that has the most success?
The best strategy is practice. The only way that the neural pathway is going to go together is to practice. Hand strength is the second most important piece of the puzzle, is making sure your hands have the adequate strength. If you can work on those pieces, handwriting legibility and speed are going to come, and all the symptoms that go along with it will decrease. Now, I say that you can overcome dysgraphia. Yeah, it's going to show its ugly head every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But if you use strategies, you can be a competent member of society. As I have, I wrote a book with a dysgraphia issue, and I'm working on book number two. So book number two is going to be on dyscalculia. So we're going to see how that goes. So you can do it. You can do it.
And when you say practice, I just want to make sure I'm clear. You're saying for them to not just the hand exercises, but for them to actually practice the writing.
Practice the writing on the paper that they need to use in the classroom. Okay. So if they're using handwriting without tears, practice on handwriting without tears. If they're using Size Matters handwriting program, practice on Size Matters handwriting paper. If you are using Mead, practice on Mead. If you're using Zahner Blaser, practice on Zahner Blaser. Reinforce what's happening in the classroom at home across all curriculums. And if one of them is not working, try another one.
Okay. Sherry, I have loved talking with you. I've learned so much and it's been very interesting. So thank you so much for sharing with us. And where can people find you?
I am at dysgraphiaconsultant.com. And if you do the / and connect, it'll show you everywhere else. So dysgraphiaconsultant.com/connect will show you wherever I am.
Yeah. And we will put her links below the podcast. And I think we will have to invite you back again, because we need to talk about this, I think, more.
Okay.
Especially after you're also about your dyscalculia. Oh, I'm not even going to say it right.
Dyscalculia.
Say it again. I can't even get it right now. I guess I haven't had enough coffee.
Dyscalculia.
Dyscalculia. All right, got it. So anyways, thank you so much for joining us today and educating us on dysgraphia and explaining all the different things. I have really enjoyed it, and I hope that it will greatly help our audience. So
I hope it does too, because there has been so much misinformation out there about it. I firmly believe that dysgraphia awareness needs to be a national campaign.
Yeah, well, I think let's do it. You and I can sign up. Let's do it. I did share about dysgraphia in October. I posted it on Facebook, connected, linked from you. So we did start it. So let's start it. I'm there.
Let's go. Let's get it going.
All right. We're going to sign off, but you've been listening to Parenting Special Needs Purposeful Conversations podcast. You can subscribe, view, and rate this podcast on iTunes. Make sure to subscribe to our free magazine for parents raising a child with special needs. And we help guide you by providing strategies, information, and inspiration. And you can also reach out and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Thank you for listening.